let's open up the retreat this evening to Ray and Daniel.
We got here, welcome from the leader story and getting acquainted. Okay, guys, give me your story.
Hi everyone, I'm Daniel.
Okay, so all week I was thinking, well, what the hell am I going to talk about? And obviously no ideas came up to mind, so I'll just have to tell you my story. I came into Overeaters Anonymous in 1983, and I didn't come in because I wanted to. I was forced to by my my job, my employer. They were worried about me because I was obese, and the insurance company was questioning my health, and they needed to do something about it. Up until then, I'd spent many years doing the diets and restrictions, etc. Before that, I went to a doctor, and he gave me Speed, Black Beauties, and all I managed to do was to eat faster. And at one time, they remember the AIDS candies to weight loss AIDS? I bought a box of those, and I ate the whole damn thing at that moment, so I figured I'd be good for the rest of the week. And that didn't work. So the times that I would lose weight, I would go from 5 to 10, 15, 20 pounds, and I gained that plus more. So it was kind of difficult. So when my boss wanted me to go see this specialist, this therapist about my weight, I got offended. You know, I said, what does that have anything to do with my work performance? I get very good reviews. How dare you even bring up the fact that I have a weight problem? Because up until then, I only saw myself from the neck up. I never saw myself from the neck down. So I went to go see this therapist, and I was very skeptical. And she was a beautiful brunette, tall woman. And she started telling me about Overeaters Anonymous. And I didn't want to hear anything about Anonymous because I didn't know anything about it. But she did say, you know, why don't you come to those meetings? I says, well, do you go to those meetings? She says, yes. I said, well, I'll go. And I figured that it was just one place where they got together. So I went there, and she wasn't there. But there was this tiny little woman talking about her life. And she was very thin. She must have been at least 100 pounds, probably the most, 100-some pounds. So she was very tiny. But they passed the picture. And I looked at this picture, and the lady next to me says, that's her up there. I said, no way. That is not her, because we're looking at a circumference here, with eyes, and I said, this is not good. And I said, this is bullshit. And he says, no, it's her. I says, wow. So I went up to her afterwards. I says, how did you do it? So in 1983, in the South Bay, Los Angeles, we had some gray sheet, and we had the dignity of choice. And so she says, well, I follow a food plan, and I work the steps. I don't know what the heck are the steps. I'm really talking about steps. So anyway, so I stuck around. I always had a problem with this thing. And so the theme for this weekend is surrender to win. I don't do surrender to win very well. In fact, today I went to Long's drugstore, and the guy says, well, you got any plans for the weekend? Because since I live in Santa Barbara now, whenever there's a festival, it seems like we have a parade for every damn thing here in Santa Barbara. You know, this week it was Fiesta Day's parade. And so next week is going to be the bad hair parade. So we have a parade for every damn day, and when they do that, they close it up, and everybody gets drunk, and they eat. So the locals, they all eat. And so he says, where are you going? I said, well, I'm going to Casa Maria. There's a retreat. He says, well, don't surrender too much, because you're going to retreat. And I said, that's very clever. I said, because you know what? my surrenders were very limited. I never wanted to retreat because I was brought up that you had to put your best effort in everything you did in order to get what you wanted. So I spent many years wondering, what was I doing wrong? How is it that other people would lose weight? In fact, I have two sisters, and one of them is obese, but the other one was very normal in her weight. So she was like the pretty child of the family. And me and my other sister, we were like the oddballs. We were like the weird ones. So my sister, my thin sister, she was able to date and do a lot of things that normal, where me, you know, you don't date when you're obese. You know, you look for drugs and alcohol. And that's what I did, you know. And so I don't know what happens, but I was always baffled how people were so concerned about my weight. And these were the same people that would offer me a donut. So they would say, you know, you need to do something about your weight because you may die of a heart attack. Now this is my grandmother saying to this, oh, by the way, I got you some cookies. So it's like I couldn't understand. The other thing I couldn't understand, how is it that there were some people that could have one chip and fold up the bag and put it away? I don't understand that. You know, all I know is all or nothing. So that's how I looked at food. Now there was something about that food does for me that baffles psychiatrists and psychologists with this. They don't understand how much pleasure I get from overeating. If they only understood the dopamine that it releases in my brain that makes me feel so good, they would probably have a little more compassion. But I remember seeing a doctor who was just as obese as I was, and he was telling me how to go on a diet. And I listened to him because he's a doctor. So, nevertheless, year after year, it seems I just kept getting bigger and bigger and bigger. So my waist got from a size 40 up to size 58. And when you're young, in your 30s, and we were talking about that earlier outside, you know, nothing really hurts. Your joints don't hurt because, you know, you're young. So as I got older, well, the joints started hurting and the back problems happened and the high blood pressure and the acid, you know, the acid reflux, you know, the sleep apnea, all these things start settling in, and, you know, and high blood, diabetes type 2 as well. So I was at my wit's end. So I came to Overeaters Anonymous wanting that diet. And I got a hold of the diet, and I was doing the dignity of choice, which, by the way, they brought it back, because we were left to our own devices from 86 on down, and guess what we did? We got big, you know, so not big in numbers, but big in volume, and so I need you guys to understand that I've done a lot of research in overeating. I mean, I've done it, and you know, I used to love to tell people I love food. I love food, and I did not know that what I was doing is that my food was just a symptom of a deeper issue, and that I didn't understand. So I figured that as long as I had the proper diet and lose the weight, that would be the end of my problems. So the times that I would lose the weight, the problems never went away. In fact, they got worse. And they made me so uncomfortable how bad it was, feeling, first of all, restricted, second of all, feeling deprived, and feeling like an oddball because here I am eating carrot sticks, broccoli, and broiled chicken. You know, and walking around looking at people while they're eating their slices of pizza, burger, and fries, I want to be like you guys. So I would say, you know what, I've lost a lot of weight. I do deserve a reward. And I would say, okay, I'll just have one burger this time. And tomorrow I'll go back on the diet. Well, that burger turned into weeks and weeks of burgers every night, you know. So I just could not understand how these people had a lot of self-control. Now, being brought up in a society that looks at me and says, well, you know what, you just need a little more more moral fortitude, more self-determination, you just need to have a little more love for yourself. How can you let yourself go like that? Somehow that just, I don't understand. So I felt a lot of shame. So on top of that, I was eating because I love food, supposedly, but I also felt guilty and ashamed of eating it as well. So I would hide when I would eat. So if you invited me over to your house, I would eat before. I want to make sure that, you know, I don't, God forbid you run out of food and I show up. You know, I'll pass out or I'll die before the end of the night. So I would eat before. So all this time, I'm walking around society thinking that, well, that's what my life is about. I'm to be obedient, and this is the way God made me, and this is the way I'm going to be. And so then I start going through the embarrassments of running out of clothes, you know, buying bigger, breaking chairs at people's homes, breaking toilet seats. And the one of the most embarrassing things was not being able to wipe yourself because you get so big. Your arms just don't reach that far. And that is really embarrassing and very sad. But yet, I felt that I still didn't have the problem. So I was a sucker for the infinite infomercials that you hear. You know, did you know that you have the answers to all your life's problems on infomercials from 2 o'clock to 5 o'clock in the morning after work? They're all there, man. I mean, you could buy real estate from two little midgets to, you know, you'll have a constant erection for the rest of your life if you buy this organic medicine that's there. So, and I don't know about you guys, but all my email, my spam email that I'm getting, I either need a new watch or I need a sex organ that's going to enhance her. So I don't know how they know these things, but God, they must be psychic. So anyway, I've always been attuned to the easier, softer way. You know, I'll listen if you give me the miracle cure. As I got into Overeaters Anonymous, I found myself liking the fellowship, liking the social part. And I really liked what you guys had, and it was a lot of fun hugging and laughing and talking, all that stuff. And I used to love to go out to dinner with you guys after lunch, after meeting, because, man, it was like a big smorgasbord. It was like, yeah, baby, you know. And what I did learn by eating with other compulsive overeaters is that you never reach into their food, because it'll be a problem. You know, and that I learned the hard way. Well, so food does for me that nobody else in life does for me. So I had a problem with that because I had a body that was starting to tell me, look, you need to stop this overeating. And it makes sense. Stop. I mean, you're starting to see the consequences. But I have a brain that says, let's just try it one more time. You know, let's just do it one more time and you'll be fine. So I had this endure to reward mentality. I was good, not no salts, no fats, no flours. Now I deserve a reward. And that's how I did it. I endured my job, I endured my boss, I endured my wife, my children, my financial situation. Now I deserve a reward. And how I would get that would be with excess food. And that's how I did it. And so the frustration was that I felt I was on a diet all this week. I should have lost all the weight. And it wasn't going anywhere. You start learning about what the big book has to say about this disease. And I just didn't like that. Because first of all, my head's still saying I have a problem that needs to be fixed through some sort of will, self-control, more discipline, very structured life. So I didn't understand why I I couldn't do it. So I would ask other people, who's your sponsor? What book are you reading? You know, what's the secret? I'm a fighter. I'm a fighter. And when I don't get my way, I use food to make it feel better. And my head says, the more the better. And we were talking about there outside, we were talking about non-fat cheese. And when I hear non-fat cheese, that means I can eat more of it because it's non-fat. So I can double up on it. I can eat like a Fiat-sized cheese, a piece of cheese, and it's okay because it's non-fat. So I'm a quantity eater. Quantity. And I rate restaurants by the amount of food they give you. It could be shit, but if it's a lot, shit, it's a good restaurant. You know, and this is how I do it. And so I remember once telling my sponsor, says, what did you eat? Oh, I said, well, I really had three buffets with nothing in between. And it says, well, you know, you're not losing any weight. I said, yeah, but I'm abstinent. Made sense to me, but see, food, excess food, releases dopamine in my brain that makes me feel better, that makes me feel comfortable, that makes me feel content, that makes me feel tranquil. And when you take away the amounts that doesn't hit that switch in my stomach, I'm upset and I'm irritable. And things get on my nerves. So I lived many years with this fat serenity syndrome that nothing bothered me. And of course didn't bother me. I'm still medicating with the damn food. So nothing bothers me. You know, I was living all the promises overeating. I knew a new peace because I had all the food to calm it down. A new serenity. I had the serenity. I was eating like there was no tomorrow. You know, I was able to handle situations that used to baffle me when I was eating, of course. But when I stopped overeating, well, that's a different story. People started getting on my nerves. I remember telling one girlfriend, I says, you know, I don't even like you. And we're sleeping together, and I don't even like you. She said, well, you picked a fine time to tell me that. Food did for me what no one else could ever do. Now, this gentleman right here says it all the time. I can do anything I want as long as I'm willing to pay the price. But when you have diabetes type 2, high blood pressure, acid reflux, you know, all these incredible complications that are coming down the pike, and your doctor's saying, you know, pal, you're not going to last very long. You start to think. You know. So when I came into these rooms and they said, we admitted we were powerless, I admitted it, but I never accepted it. See what I mean? I can admit. I don't accept it though. Because I'm not ready, or I'm not willing, or better yet, I'm scared to really let go of a lot of food. Admittance is not acceptance or approval. Dr. Paul, in the acceptance chapter, says, until I could accept my alcoholism, I could not stay sober. He didn't say until I admitted my alcoholism. He said until I accepted it. See, I always walked around saying, God damn it, why am I so fat? Why am I fat? How come my sister wasn't fat? How come they? Why am I goddamn fat? And I'm reading in the big book that it's telling me that I need to approve of my disease in order to do something about it. Now, all my efforts to fix my disease didn't work. It really didn't work. I mean, there were very few periods of success followed by long periods of frustration and self-hate. So, I really struggled with that. to accept my disease means that I have gotten a flat tire in my car and I'm willing to get out and fix it. I just don't stay there. I could admit to you that I got a flat tire and I'm not going to do shit about it. Goddamn car can stay there for the rest of the night as I care. But if I acknowledge it, I approve it, I'm getting off to fix that car. Or I'm going to call AAA, one of the two. See, but now we have to get into the problem of, well, what is it that I need to do? Because, man, I'm weak. You know, I'm good here on the weekend, but come Sunday afternoon when I leave here, man, I'm going to the same shit. You know, I'm going to go home and take an inventory in my refrigerator, how much food I got. You know, because God forbid that I should go into a famine. So here, practicing the 12 steps and recovery is very easy. We are in a sheltered area. We're away from work. We're away from wives and partners. We're away from friends. In fact, many of us are still going through withdrawals because we've turned off our cell phones. You know, oh my God, what am I going to do without my cell phone? I left it in the damn room. I turned it off. So, I need to have a power. See, this is the thing about the big book. It says that no matter what effort you may do, it's only going to be short-lived because you really need a spiritual help here. What help? Spiritual help. Higher power. Well, I believe in God. I believe in God, but He's busy with the war in Iraq and famines and hurricanes. Why should He care what I eat? See? And that's the problem, because it tells me I need to have a source that's going to give me the same dopamine release that food does, that's going to replace that effect that I get with food. I find that fascinating. And I said, these people are nuts. How can you replace food with some energy? I don't understand. Well, it does say that. It says that we will have this power. May you find them now. Surrender means that I'm willing to let go and be guided by somebody else's influence. It's kind of like the soldiers that give up, they're cuffed, and they're whisked away. The third step, when I made a decision to turn my will and my life over to the care of God, holy shit, if you didn't take it serious, it's at that point that you lost all control of your life. Everything, man. Do you know that all the problems that I have in my life are the ones that I have control over? The ones that I manage? The ones that God has control of, I have no problem. It's the shit that I am managing that I have power over. Financial, relationships, work, food, all those, because I have control over them. I'm not willing to let this influence guide me away because I still think I can fix it. Everything I try to fix only gets worse. And thus the many years of research and frustrations and obesity. So, what I'm trying to get at, this weekend is about surrender. Are you willing to be cuffed and whisked away by a different power? That's the thing that has to happen. Or you can go back to the frustrations. But there's a different way of doing things. And this is the thing that baffles me, because my idea is I want to fix it and I want to correct it and I want to adjust it. and I can't, because everything I put my paws on, I'm going to screw up. And it's not until I let go and I let God that things start working out. Third step, made a decision to turn my will and my life over to the care of God. I mean, I guess we don't walk around with superstitions, but these are not ideas new. I mean, these, whatever I'm telling you tonight, this is nothing new. This is stuff I've heard from many years ago. This is, I'm not, nothing I tell you is original. It was passed down to me. So, if we turn on the switch and up goes the light, there's power there. We turn off the switch, it goes out. There is some tangible evidence that there is an energy source that's powering me to live one day at a time. I don't do that well because I like to think the future. I believe in the positive power of worrying ahead of time. Just in case shit happens, I worry it ahead of time. I don't want them to accuse you, see, Daniel, shit happened and you never worried. How dare you? So, we say, if you pray, why worry? If you worry, why pray? So, everything I have control over, I have problems with. I don't know how long I've been talking, but... So, think about that today. What do you have control over that you're having problems with? And to be honest with you, whenever they asked me that, I gave everything problem except my obesity. I needed to put that number one. It's the obesity factor that I have a problem. That's the one I've always been trying to fix. And then the rest came down. But I was willing to tell, well, I have problems in the bank, I have problems with work, but I don't want to talk about my body. I don't want to talk about the very thing I'm killing every day. You see, obesity is a very slow death, and it is really slow. You know, I wish it was more glamorized, but it's not. It's much more glamorous to die an alcoholic, a drug addict with a needle sticking out of your vein than a 400, 500 pound guy that they can't take out of the room, that they use a crane. It's not that glamorous. Hollywood doesn't look at it that way. You know. Hollywood doesn't look good when we have gangrene coming out of our feet. You know, this is the stuff that we're destined to if we don't do anything about it. So, I'll leave you with this. Think about it. What areas of your life you have problems, most likely that's the one you have control over. Okay, so come here to surrender to win. And we'll continue with that tomorrow. Thank you.
Thank you, Daniel. Ray, before you go, Bob, we have a very special evening tonight. Ray is celebrating his birthday for 37 years. Yeah, baby.
I've known Ray for 30 years. I nicknamed him Reverend Ray since he's a big book thumper. Mazel tov.
Thank you.
I don't know how the hell you use this thing.
Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday, dear Ray. Happy birthday to you. He's on the back.
I'm an upstanding compulsive overeater. My name is Ray. Hi.
Hi, Ray.
Today is 37 years, back-to-back abstinence, maintaining a 55-pound weight loss, because when I came into the program, my sponsor said to me, sit down and shut up and don't talk for a year. So I sat down, I shut up, and I listened. And I listened and I heard what I needed to hear. Because when I came into the program, I was on the verge of a paralytic stroke. My blood pressure was 180 over 110. That's the blood pressure of an 80-year-old man on the verge of a paralytic stroke, doctor told me. He told me that I needed to do something other than what I was doing, because I was in the insurance business. I was working 27 hours a day, 9 days a week. I wound up number one, but while winding up number one, I also did a mess on my health, so I got out of it. I had to surrender to the fact that I needed to do something other than what I always had in mind. And I said to my sponsor, I said, look, you people talk about this God thing. I'm a Jewish boy. My grandfather was a rabbi. I had a big bar mitzvah, much bigger than my wedding. And I still don't see God. How do I find God? She says, well, get down on your knees. I said, oh. She says, what's the matter? I says, I'm Jewish. She says, that's right, God doesn't care. Get down on your knees and ask God to reveal himself to you as he wants you to know him. So I did that. I got up. I said, nothing happened. She says, keep on doing it and it will work. So I did it a few more times. So I went to bed and I figured, well, listening to an alcoholic that had been pronounced dead from alcoholism three different times, I knew that this would not work. Next morning at 4:32 in the morning, at the foot of my bed, was the same type of vision that is now spelled out on page 14 of the 12 and 12. And when I told the doctor that afternoon about it, he said exactly what's on page 14. He says, something strange has happened to you that I don't understand, but you better hang on to it because anything was better than the way you were. I took my blood pressure the other day. It was 127 over 74. My pulse is 67. I'm a pre-diabetic and my blood ranges anywhere from 99 or a little bit over that. It could be 100, 101, 102. As long as it stays under 125, which is where they said is the danger point, everything's okay. I've got a few things that are going on that I have to surrender to. I was having trouble swallowing pills that I used to be able to swallow with no problem. I went to the doctor. He said, you've got a Zenker's diverticulum, which is a fancy name. There's a little sac hanging off of my esophagus. He says, it's not going to get any better or get worse. When it gets so bad that you can't swallow food or water, come see me and we'll do surgery and correct it. So I have to surrender. And what does surrender mean? It means to be held in check by a power greater than myself, God as I understand him. They say, how do we do this? H-O-W. We do this with honesty. We do this with open-mindedness. And we do this with willingness. That's great. But where does this apply? Well, if I change H-O-W to W-H-O, I've got who. So now, who does H-O-W apply to? Well, obviously it applies to me. Great, I'm on my way. Everything's all right. Not quite. Again, I'm the one who's exercising the power and I don't have the power. Because the big book tells me that lack of power, that's my dilemma. I think it's on page 45 of the big book. So how do I get the power that I lack? I change O-W-H there. H-O-W, O-W-H, And no matter how I do it, I got one with him. And now I've got the power. So now I am free. And surrender. Every night when I go to bed, the first thing I do is surrender and ask God for His blessings for the day. And I do this by telling Him, first of all, I thank Him for the day that I've just had. Then I thank Him for all that He's taken away, all that He's given me, and all that He's left me with. And then I can go to sleep. And when I wake up in the morning, the very first thing I do is I sit up in bed. Even before I go pedal, there, I know we're on tape, so there. I put my feet over the side of the bed and I do the third step prayer on page 63 of the big book. But I do it with visualization, because all great ideas begin in the workshop of the imagination. God, and that's source. God is source, man is manifestation. What I am is God's gift to me. But what I do with it is my gift to God. And it's a two-way street, and I don't get something for nothing. And then with visualization, God, I offer myself to Thee, and I visualize myself stepping forward to God as I understand Him. Relieve me of the bondage of self. And I understand what Martin Luther King Jr. said when he said, free at last, great God Almighty, I'm free at last. Because when I ask God to relieve me of the bondage of self, I am free. I am free to start my day. And always, always, it's Ray behind God. God and Ray, and always in that order. If I ever get out of that order, I'm in trouble, because I've been there. And it didn't work there. As Dan did a good job of saying about acceptance, acceptance is the answer to all of my problems today. And it goes on to say something along the line that whenever I am disturbed, it is because I find some person, place, thing, or situation unacceptable to me. And I can find no peace until I accept whatever that is exactly as it's supposed to be. It validates that by saying nothing, absolutely nothing, happens in God's world by mistake, and I believe it. I believe it because I see it every day. I see it in everything that I do. I see it in abstinence. You know, for me, abstinence must be the most important thing in my life without exception. Why is that? Because without abstinence, I can't find God. And without God, I can't work the program. I must have that power greater than myself. So the 11 suggested steps to recovery, tell me about that. The first step is a compulsory step. It validates that in the big book. It says we had to admit to our innermost selves that we are compulsive overeaters. This is the first step of recovery. So then what do they do with the 11 suggested steps to recovery? They take and they put belief as the first of the remaining 11 steps. Belief. Okay? Came to believe. There. And in this business of OA, came means I showed up. Came to means I woke up. And came to believe means I stood up under the umbrella of God. You see, belief sees the invisible. It accepts the incredible and it receives the impossible. Do you realize the promises that we have? Speaking about that, when I first got in, I looked at the big book and I said, this book's got too many pages to read to learn how to work this program. So I flipped it open and it came up on a page that said financial insecurity would disappear. And since I was having financial problems all along, I decided I'd buy the book. Now you know and I know it does not say financial insecurity would disappear. It says the fear of financial insecurity will leave us. We will intuitively know how to handle situations which used to baffle us. Well, I started reading the book, and every day, in every way, I find that the promises are coming true in my life. One of the things when I found out I had the pleasure and privilege of dealing with Dan Salzarp here on the retreat as a co-retreat leader, one of the things I made a promise for me and to you is that I would share my own experience, my own strength, and my own hope. I am a believer in the fact that if you can't walk the walk first, please don't talk the talk. I'm not interested in bullshit. I'm not interested in your opinions. Everybody has an opinion, okay? And you know what that's comparable to, okay? So as a result, the days that we have here, for me and I'm sure Dan there, we will be sharing our own experience, our own strength, our own hope, and the path that each of us follows to get to where we want to get to. I can tell you that I'm sure that there's an awful lot of people in here that earn a great deal more than I do, and that's easy to do because I have no earned income. However, God is in charge, and with His help, that which is right and good will come to pass. You know what HELP is? That's an acronym for His ever-loving presence. Okay? And, you know, people say, don't be pushy in life. But I found out that I can push through life. P-U-S-H. Pray until something happens. And, you know, one day I was talking to God. I call him the coach there. And I said to him, I says, Coach, I said, you're everywhere. How do you differentiate when I'm asking for help from anybody else? How do you know which kid of yours, out of the millions of kids that you've got, how do you know that prayer is going to work? See, I believe that prayer works. But I only believe it because I asked the coach, I says, how do I know you're listening? He says, well, Ray, I've given you two things that nobody else has. One is a set of fingerprints. I said, well, yeah, I know that. Everybody talks about fingerprints and everything. He says, but the next important thing is a voice pattern that is different than anybody else's. Voice pattern. Now, a good monologist like Rich Little can duplicate voices. He cannot duplicate the voice pattern, and that's why prayer works. Okay? It's the magic of believing is what it takes to make this program work. We're going to cover a lot of things in the next few days. I want to commit to you that I will do the very best I can with what I've got for where I'm at
to share with you what I do. I cannot do for another that which they're not willing to do for themselves. But let me show you a couple of flashcards that we have. And for you people who are listening to it on tape, I'm holding up a sign that says, God is nowhere. Okay. However, if we turn that around and read it correctly, it reads, God is now here. So it's all in the way I look at things. All right. We talked about abstinence. And I'm holding up a sign that says, no abstinence. And the other side says, no God. That's why abstinence must be the most important thing in my life, without exception. Not only from the standpoint of serenity, the ability to live peacefully, joyously, and comfortably with myself, but from the health standpoint. I hear constantly about people having strokes, heart attacks, diabetes, on and on it goes, simply because they're carrying more weight than they need. However, it is not for me to judge what your weight should be, or could be, or anything of that sort. I've got a full-time job taking care of myself, okay? The next sign says, no abstinence, K-N-O-W, no abstinence. And the other side says, K-N-O-W, no God. Okay. A sign here that says, no God and no peace. And if we flip it over, the sign says, no God and no peace. And that's the truth. So what was my problem? Or what was my problem when I realized that things were not going the way they should be going? Was there anything wrong with me? I always thought I was fine. That's the acronym for fucked up, insecure, neurotic, and eating. Okay. And I found out nothing of that sort was the case. It was simply that I was nuts. And I'm holding up a sign that says nuts, N-U-T-S. Not using the steps. And that's exactly it. You see, when I do what I'm supposed to do in the way I'm supposed to do it, then I achieve the results that I'm looking for. One of the biggest character defects that I ran into in my many inventories was fear. F-E-A-R. False evidence appearing real. Now to me, that bothered me because besides being a compulsive overeater, I am a neurotic. I am a person who is highly emotional, easily upset, very sensitive, and worst of all, capable of making decisions destructive to myself. There. So these are the things I need to look out for. So when I encountered fear, I said there's got to be a better definition than false evidence appearing real. So somebody said, yeah, there is. I said, what's that? They said, fuck everything and run. Well, that isn't the answer either. So what is the answer if those aren't? For me, face everything and recover. when I face the things I fear the most, the death of fear is certain. When I face the things I fear the most, the death of fear is certain. Okay. Alright, I've talked long enough for here, and you people are great listeners. I am going to ask one favor of you guys, please. I've got two really bad ears, even with the digital hearing aids. So when you share or anything of that sort, would you do me a favor? Would you use your outside voice and make it louder? I know it may be uncomfortable for some of you, but you see, I don't have all the answers yet. And I won't have them for a long time, but I'm going to pick up a lot of them this weekend from you people who are going to be kind enough to share your own experience, your own strength, and your own hope. Take care. God bless you, and thanks for letting me share.
Okay.